What I didn't tell you so far is that it was Henry Kissinger in 1968, when he became National Security Advisor under Richard Nixon, that the option to develop these types of viruses was selected. Selected, apparently, by Kissinger. You see, when Kissinger took over under Nixon as National Security Advisor, the most powerful man in American intelligence, he immediately ordered Melvin Laird to do a reassessment of America's biological weapons capabilities. He was looking for alternatives to nuclear weapons. How did Kissinger become the nuclear weapons guru of the world? Well, Nelson Rockefeller made Henry Kissinger the Council of Foreign Relations Nuclear Weapons Study Group Director in 1955. As a result, he became the guru, and as a result, we now have nuclear weapons deployed around the face of the planet. In fact, it was Henry Kissinger. I remember, I was born in 52, and I remember as a youngster in grade school running downstairs in our schools with nuclear weapons drills. And I was afraid. I don't know about you, those of you who remember doing that. I was afraid. It sent chills down my spine. At that point, I didn't even know what we were doing. But it was Henry Kissinger's statement, quote, that a fallout shelter in every home in America is that a price that Americans should be willing to pay for their freedom, end quote. So that Kissinger now is looking for alternatives to nuclear weapons because, you know, nuclear weapons are kind of messy. They destroy the infrastructure. You know, they destroy the buildings and things, and, you know, they blow up everything, and it's expensive to rebuild the stuff that's valuable. And biological weapons are so much cleaner and so much more less expensive. And you can literally kill off the same numbers of people, if not more. So the order was given to develop these. And, of course, then you had, as a result of that, the 1969 communication between Department of Defense and National Academy of Sciences, National Research Council, around the same time that Duesberg was serving with them and around the same time that David Baltimore was one of their heads. How also does Kissinger get involved in biotechnology, and where does this whole thing kind of fit in into the New World Order agenda? People have no clue that the New World Order agenda has been evolving for centuries, but the contemporary evolution of the New World Order is virtually identical to Henry Kissinger's early 50s Harvard PhD thesis called The Meaning of History, wherein he lays out the need for ongoing small wars around the planet on a continuing basis to maintain the economic alignment of the superpowers, of which the war against AIDS, the war against drugs, the war against crime, the war against illiteracy, the war against illegal immigration, all of these useless wars that taxpayers are spending countless fortunes to fund, only building huge dysfunctional bureaucracies and funding the coffers of the oligarchy, the shadow governors. So this is the Rockefeller-led, principally military, medical, industrial complex today. And medicine, you know, it's fabulous. It's now, at least in the United States, over 15% of the gross national product. It's as huge an industry as is military. So, you know, you report more people are dying from living off of cancer than dying from cancer, and it's true. And who started the cancer industry but the Rockefellers in the 1920s? So Kissinger's role, where does he fit in, where does he really go back to in this whole mess, is literally in around 1938-39, Kissinger leaves Nazi Germany, literally three months before Kristallnacht. He leaves Nazi Germany. According to Walter Isaacson in the book Kissinger, Kissinger's greatest gripe leaving at age 16, when my mother, age 16, is in Nazi Austria scrubbing the streets at Nazi gunpoint, Kissinger leaves with his parents. His greatest gripe, according to Walter Isaacson, is that why can't he march in the streets like the other Nazi youth? And in fact, in the Bible, it talks about beware of those who call themselves Jews who are not. Henry Kissinger is a classic example of that, you see. This is a man who denied his Judaism. He has no spiritual reality. He has dons a yarmulke, like President Clinton, when it's politically convenient, and then takes it off. And you see, he goes back to Nazi Germany in the infantry. 6 years later, age 23, never fires a shot, immediately gets boosted up into American intelligence among the highest positions as the right-hand man, the chief translator for General Boling, who's Joint Intelligence Commission director, the, quote, godfather to Project Paperclip. Kissinger becomes American intelligence's chief Nazi hunter. His assignment to seek out and find Nazis, not for war crime trial, as we all believe, but for service to American intelligence and American industry. This was all done under top secret project codenamed Paperclip, Project Paperclip, which was the exfiltration of approximately 2,000 Nazis out of Germany through the Rat Line, the secret railroad that went from Germany to Rome, wherein, before the war's end, they got out almost all of the highest level Nazis and all the Nazi money, including the gold. In the newspapers recently, at least in the United States, USA Today had 5 days where they had a special thing that said not only where did the gold go, but the Red Cross knew that the Nazis were up to no good and they could have done more. Again, 80% truth. They don't tell you 10%, 20% of the most important facts. The Nazis, by the way, were given false identifications through the American Red Cross. They were given CIA identifications, like the false one of Klaus Barbie, who I show you in the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, reprinted in black and white. Joseph Mengele, another one that got out in this matter. And Eric Traub, T-R-A-U-B, and his assistant, Hitler's top biological weapons developer, that they took out, and he went to work. They put him to work at the United States Naval Biological Research Laboratory. They paid them, these people, $65,000 a year starting in 1948, plus benefits. That was a lot of money back then, and for a lot of people today, that's still a lot of money. So this is Hitler's top biological weapons developer. And the American Red Cross, I told you that it was Lawrence Rockefeller that put together the New York City Blood Council. This was the Council of Doctors that put together the New York City Blood Bank. These became the international blood bankers, you see? These were the people that allowed 10,000 hemophiliacs throughout the United States and countless others throughout the world to get HIV-contaminated blood, simply, allegedly, because they didn't want to spend $150 million to clean them up. Maybe they had a different agenda besides money. So the Nazis are getting out through the rat line. Unfortunately, half of the Nazi war chest, remaining $300 million at the end of the war, was laundered through, or filtered through, that is, the Chase Bank Paris branch, which happened to remain open throughout the German occupation of Paris. That's Rockefeller's bank. And that the Dulles brothers, John Foster and Alan Dulles, we have out of Washington, D.C., an airport, Dulles Airport. The hero to America, right? It was the Dulles brothers who were John D. Rockefeller, Standard Oil's chief legal counsel and chief business managers. It was the Dulles brothers that engineered the partnership, you see, between IG Farben, Germany's leading industrial group, and John D. Rockefeller, Standard Oil. It was, and by the way, the Third Reich. It was IG Farben that was Hitler's principal military armaments company. These were the people that used the concentration camp victims as slave labor to build and run their factories. These were the people that held the patent on the gas that killed those millions of people. This is Rockefeller's partner. Many Americans are holding, and maybe Canadians too, Chase Bank, Manhattan Bank cards. Buying gas from Esso, Exxon, might want to think twice. We are funding this. So, literally, it is a tribute to counterintelligence propaganda that we don't have the American Jewish community, the African American community, and the Nation of Islam, and the American Christian community joining hand in hand, picketing outside Chase Manhattan Bank in New York, literally burning Rockefeller in effigy. That's a tribute to the great effort of American counterintelligence. Persuasion technology research efforts funded by Rockefeller and Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, who paid Massachusetts Institute of Technology $200,000 a year during the 1960s under the neurosciences umbrella. How noble. For, quote, public management, mass persuasion technologies research, brainwashing. The Dulles brothers, besides, remember I told you that not only what you know about AIDS is a deception, what you know about virtually everything is a deception. It was the Dulles brothers that clearly engineered the Cold War. Not only was the Rockefellers making money off of every side of every war of this whole past century, but it wasn't enough after World War II. They had to create another war called the Cold War. You see, the game was to separate people, divide and conquer. The sheeple. Yeah. Divide the sheeple to conquer the flock. You know, the international banksters. They make money off of both sides of every war. That's why we have the rifts that we do between the nations. They funded the Marx, Lenin, communism. They separate communists from socialists, from capitalists, Democrat from Republican, reform from liberal, conservative. You see, they play it off against one another. White from black, rich from poor, black. HIV positive from HIV negative, gay from straight, Christian from Muslim, Jew from Gentile. That's the game, folks. Time we wake up. We've been had. They manipulate. The game is manipulate through fear. Today, somebody on radio called up and were discussing, like, am I spreading fear needlessly? My response should have been, you're a cult member and you don't even know who your cult leader is. You know, they made me the cult leader. This is funny. Warner Brothers, about 3 weeks ago on national television, they made me the new cult leader of all of the crazy lunatic cult members who believe that the AIDS and Ebola viruses are man-made. How about that? I have a great cult following. My 2-year-old and 5-year-old and my wife supporting me. That's my cult. So at any rate, you see, this is the Rockefeller military medical industrial complex. Now, the Rockefeller group began to fund in 1920s not only the Flexner Report, which outlawed all of the other alternatives to pharmaceutical medicine and healing. In fact, it's an insult that we have to call what we do frequently alternative. The herbs, acupuncture, chiropractic, this is alternative medicine. The only reason it's called alternative medicine is because the Rockefellers, they funded the Flexner Report, which then went around the schools and then legislation saying that these people should be outlawed, not allowed to practice. It was the Rockefellers, you see, also that started the cancer industry. How did they do that? Oh, well, they found that cancer was an up-and-coming thing. There was a Rouse sarcoma virus that they discovered in the early 1900s. Chicken sarcoma, and that they felt that viruses might be associated with cancers in humans. They knew it in animals now, and they started an industry. And what they did is, and I wrote about this in the book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, they got Mary Lasker. They called her Mary and her little lambs. Mary Lasker's husband was one of New York City's chief advertising agents. And so they hired Mary to get involved, and they played on the emotions and the heartstrings of America, saying that showing pictures of disabled children, cancer-ridden people. And as a result of that, you know, we gave a lot of money, you and I, and our parents did, to cancer research, the American Cancer Society. Meanwhile, we were just funding the Rockefellers, literally funding the Rockefellers or their agendas. They also started in the early 1920s, what was called eugenics, the research that showed that there were differences between the races genetically. And this gave rise to the racial hygiene laws in the United States. In fact, if you were a black man in the United States in the 1920s and you wanted to marry a white woman, if you were in the South, you'd likely be hung. In the North, you'd be jailed, as just like a white man would be if he wanted to marry a black woman. And this was allegedly based on sound scientific evidence funded by Rockefellers that showed that blacks were genetically inferior to whites and the races should not mix. And now in 1928, Rockefellers got a little bit more money to spend on this project, so he built the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Eugenics in Germany. And this becomes the world's preeminent eugenics research facility, institute, and that this now gives rise to the people and the racial hygiene agenda that supported Hitler and his rise to power with his racial hygiene agenda. So in 1932, when Hitler co-authors Mein Kampf, what does he tell you right in Mein Kampf? To raise money for his political agenda, he tells us, oh, I am not a bad man, I am not doing anything wrong, I'm not doing anything unusual. Just look at, for example, I take my lead from the Rockefeller-funded research that shows that obviously blacks are genetically inferior to whites, and he adds Jews. So that a few years later, 1938, you have the purging of the European universities of the Jewish professors, and where do you think these people went? They went, many of them, they came to the United States. They went to work, for example, Rockefeller University. They went to work for Cold Springs Harbor Research Laboratories in New York, supported and funded by Rockefeller Foundation, Sloan Foundation, and others. They went to work for Yale University, where they have today the leading virology department. And they went to work for the University of Chicago, built by Rockefeller money. By the way, that's exactly where Dr. Robert Gallo came from, University of Chicago. And this research continues over here. At the same time, it's ongoing over there. And during the Holocaust, you have the most hideous experiments in the history of mankind, humanity. Mild among the thousands of horrific experiments, they take large-gauge needles. They jab it into an eye of a living human being without anesthetic, and they extract a little eye color sample, and then they do genetic analysis on it to find out which genes are associated with eye color. That's mild comparison to the other thing. If you don't believe me, go to Washington, D.C. sometime. Go to the National Holocaust Museum. You see there, not only do they show you pictures, but they show you the medical artifact. You literally see what they were using for tools to do this type of experimentation. So, after the war, eugenics gets a bad name. Surprise, surprise, it gets a bad name. So what do? They have to change the name. They call it the Human Genome Project. Great name, the Human Genome Project. And it continues full speed ahead at Cold Springs Harbor Laboratory, where approximately 2 years ago, they finally announced, we have virtually completed the analysis of the entire human genome. Gene for gene, we now know the human being's DNA sequence. And now because of this knowledge, we will be able to be much closer to developing effective cures for specific genes that cause specific predispositions for diseases in certain races even. Now that's why every month or so you're reading in your newspaper, gene for breast cancer in Jewish women discovered, or gene for sickle cell anemia in black people discovered. So isn't it interesting how frequently It's genes for Jews and genes for blacks that they're discovering. Now you understand maybe why. So when I talked to Gallo, one of the things that he put on tape, and I knew also that that was true. In fact, it was in Laurie Garrett's book as well, but one of the objections that Gallo presented to me as to why my thesis was not possible, he says that because, quote, we did not have the sophisticated molecular genetic biotechnology's capabilities to be able to create the AIDS virus gene by gene, until 1975. Well, you know something? Alexander Graham Bell did not need fiber optics to make his first telephone call either. And I have documented evidence, just as David Baltimore in the definitive textbook called Biological and Toxic Weaponry, published by Oxford University Press, wherein Baltimore and others report that, in fact, not only did they have very crude methods and were using crude methods of recombining viruses, just as I showed you, during the 1960s, but they were evaluating these for biological weapons development. It was a crude process. It took a long time. They would put animal cancer viruses together, mix viruses up, then they would separate the different isolates, and it would take a long time to test each one to see what one would do. That's what they were doing. And I have documented evidence to support that. So Gallo's claim in that regard is like the others, totally bogus. But his point is interesting, because you see, since 1975, they have held the sophisticated molecular genetic biotechnology capabilities that allows them to construct designer viruses that only trigger certain disease predispositions in certain races. So that when I was approached by this Pentagon official and many other people who were equally concerned about the United States military being taken out for accomplishing a New World Order agenda, a super government, you see, their concern was because the United States Department of Defense, the Pentagon, was preparing to inoculate 1.2 million military personnel and their families with a new anthrax vaccine, that their concern was that they could literally take out 37% of the United States military who's black and Hispanic with one injection. Now, my mother died a couple years ago of a flu vaccine, most plausibly a flu vaccine. Induced disease called Guillain-Barré, or what they call the French polio, which people who have studied now vaccine contamination risk issues, understand that Guillain-Barré is one of the most common vaccine-related injuries. And you see, I can't help but think that my mother, Jewish, beautiful, blonde, blue-eyed woman, who escaped these people in 1939 by literally getting on the last boat that made it out, was killed by the same people. Because you think that the agenda's ever ceased? George Bush, during his presidential election, was funded by the Nazi and their heirs. Largely, a great portion of his political campaign funds came directly from the Nazis or their heirs that they got out during Project Paperclip. You see, they're taking us out, and we don't even know it. Well, isn't that neat? You think about it. What did they tell those millions of people that they marshaled into the gas chamber? And they went. They went without rioting, without putting up a fuss. They told them that this was for public health. This is for your own health. This is for, quote, disinfection. What are they telling us today? When you see that vaccine legislation over the past several years, the past 2-3 years, for example, we have never seen so much vaccines and attention to the vaccines. In fact, the other day, the United States government and the Centers for Disease Control, in my opinion, committed a complete atrocity, an insult to intelligence. Unfortunately, there's little of that anymore. You might have heard the story of how contaminated fruit, strawberries and blueberries, allegedly came from Mexico containing hepatitis A viruses, and that the United States government then proceeded to make desserts and then ship them to 8 or 9 states, 8 or 9,000 children in the United States then developed hepatitis A. And who did they blame? Not so much the Mexicans. They gave the Mexicans a little slap on the wrist. Oh, it must be those dirty Mexicans. Just like those dirty blacks. You know, Richard Preston's the thesis and Laurie Garrett's thesis and Gallo's thesis that it was an African green monkey in the deep, dark forests of Africa where there's black people and it's dark. There's nothing like subliminal racist propaganda to continue to divide and conquer the flock. What did they blame? They blamed American parents, particularly mothers, for not getting their children vaccinated. Yes, in every newspaper around the country, it was used, it was twisted and distorted. Instead of in every other industry, if you have a company that puts out a contaminated product, what happens to that company? They take the product off the shelves and they have congressional hearings and legislative inquiries, and they then make sure that they have high standards of disinfection, sterilization, quality, but not in this case. The United States government didn't do that. They blamed you parents out there for not getting your children vaccinated. Talk about absolute, consistent Machiavellian and Hegelian propaganda. Create a problem, then create the solution. In this way, distort, twist it, so it plays into the political agenda. That's how they do it. It's how they continue to brainwash us. So, at any rate, I can't help but think, based on this evidence, that today's physicians' offices and public health settings are like the concentration camps of yesteryear, and that today's vaccines are like the gas. Thank you. And indeed, and today's vaccines are like the gas. So what are we going to do about it? Now, this is obviously not just my problem, it's yours as well. Well, first of all, what I would recommend as I take you into the next part of this presentation, which deals with the vaccines and the comment that, quote, vaccines are safe and effective. We'll see how safe and effective these vaccines really are. But you should know that you need to, at this point in history, boost your immune system in every which way possible. What does that include doing? First of all, I want to tell you that there is no magic bullet. Stop looking for magic bullets. There are none. In the United States, we now have colloidal silver as a universal, being touted as a universal antibacterial, antibiotic, antiviral. I'm sorry. You know, the newspapers allege, or the columns allege, that this kills 600 different types of microorganisms. Well, how wonderful. I told you that by 1970, they had isolated more than 70,000 different strains of viruses. Everybody has been brainwashed by the pharmaceutical industry to think that popping a magic pill is going to cure every ill, and it's not. God created us with a brain so that we can begin to evaluate our needs and what we need to do. In this regard, to boost your immune system, that incorporates physical, mental, emotional, social, environmental, and above all, spiritual changes that facilitate optimal health. So physically, what can we do for ourselves to boost our immune system and our families? Well, obviously, since the soils have been depleted of nutrients and micronutrients for, well, at least 50 years, because in the 1930s, the United States Congress actually held hearings on the fact that researchers said that since the soils were depleted and human beings were no longer getting the required nutrients in their bodies from the vegetables and fruit even, that they would need to have supplementation to boost their immune system. So today, obviously, supplementation is what we absolutely need, and that's exactly why your medical mafia wants to pull it off the shelves. Part of the Codex Alimentarius legislation, propaganda, and objective. I recently returned from France, wherein Belgensky worked with Gallo, Montaigne, among the most esteemed of all the world's molecular biologists and virologists and cancer researchers, published side by side, presented side by side with these top people, until one day he published a paper and came out with a paper that contradicted his superior's statement that reverse transcriptase, that unique enzyme that calls for life to operate in reverse. Belgensky found it in bacteria. His superior said it didn't exist in bacteria, and he got axed. He got fired. So he began to research his own methods, and he started to study plant extracts as anti-cancer drugs. And by the late 80s, early 90s, he had such a large following that the medical mafia in France became concerned, and they started to target him. And he was so famous that French President Mitterrand, when all of his physicians pronounced him dead and said he had only days, if most weeks, to live, Mitterrand then went to Belgensky. And Belgensky, with his cancer treatments, kept him alive for another 18 months. And don't you know, when I went to visit him, he was literally locked in his apartment. They had taken away his passport. He couldn't travel. He couldn't write. He couldn't speak. He couldn't present his research before anyone. They came into his laboratory, handcuffed him, escorted him to jail, and that's an example of what they do. By the way, he gave me a paper. In a couple minutes, I'm going to talk about hepatitis B vaccines as an example. He gave me a paper because I had been meeting. I recently met with the Nation of Islam's health minister, Ali Mohammed, and legislative committee from the National Medical Association, which represents all the black physicians in the United States. And Ali Mohammed has recommended a moratorium on vaccines. And the National Medical Association is involved, and so the Centers for Disease Control got involved, and I met with CDC officials a few weeks ago, and we're now forming a committee. See, your support is so urgent in this area. That's why your grassroots support gives me the power to say what I said to David Satcher, the director of the Centers for Disease Control, when he personally invited me and Ali Mohammed down to visit him at the CDC. You know what I wrote him? I said, I'm not interested. Only under one condition will I come. The condition is that you pay more than lip service to the issues, and that you critically evaluate the role that your agency played in the development of the vaccine that most plausibly delivered AIDS to the world. Then I'll go. See, what gives me the power to do that
are you people.
You see that? The grassroots. This is a grassroots movement. The solutions are not going to come down from above. It is what we are going to do. It's the letter writing. It's the campaign. It's the phone calls. The organizing in your communities. It's the support of organizations like your Canadian groups that are fighting Codex Alimentarius. In the United States, it's the National Health Federation. Support for these organizations that are making a difference, that are trying to fight this huge Goliath. So, at any rate, Valjensky said, here, you ask them this question, because that's what the purpose of this meeting is. We're firing hard questions at the CDC officials. Among the questions that Ali Mohammed has placed on the table is, besides the scientific evidence that shows that the vaccines are obviously heavily contaminated, and they don't need to be, is the question of genocide. Ali Mohammed told the CDC directors, I also want to have some serious questions answered as to whether genocide is an ongoing U.S. government policy. So, at any rate, Valjensky gives me something to give and ask the CDC officials. He says, you know, in 1986, 87, 88, I published paper and research on the hepatitis B vaccines produced by Smith, Klein, Beecham, and Merck, Sharp, and Dohme. He says, I found these contained a very highly carcinogenic enzyme. And I went to them and I told them to get it out, that they should get it out. He told me to date they still have not removed it. So, obviously, personal self-care practices in the age of the current and coming plagues involves avoiding the risks. That's why I can no longer, in good conscience, as a public health professional, recommend that you get vaccinated with anything until there is a thorough, complete, scientific, independent, as well as congressional investigation into all the documented published facts. So, boosting your immune system, avoiding risks, avoiding toxins, eating right, boosting your immune system with nutritional supplements. I understand there are numerous companies that are doing some wonderful things with the latest in micronutrients and nutrients, colloidal in aspects. So read up about these things. There's lots of books. There's lots of other authorities that can tell you that. As a matter of fact, I right now in press is a taking care of yourself program that I'm putting together. I'm still working on it. It should be available by September, October 1997, wherein I lay out what we need to do for ourselves physically and then mentally, emotionally, socially, environmentally, spiritually, to boost our immune system. So what do you think about mentally? Obviously, positive thinking. You can't get down about this stuff. You just got to get activated. Now, I know that's hard to do for you. Here's what you have to go through. You know Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's death and dying model? That's what you literally have to go through. I want you to know I didn't sleep for 9 months. I don't wish that on you. I hope you don't have to go through that. But literally, the first part of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's death and dying model, see, the concept that our governments are in supporting our health and doing things for our benefit is something that has to die. And in the process of that, there's a part of us that dies too, the trusting self, and that's painful. So the first thing that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross says, we've got to be in denial. I was in denial about this for a solid eight months before I began to investigate that document. So you got to go through denial. People who are in denial, bless them and let them stay in denial for a little while longer. The next thing is you get to anger. You get a little angry about it. Many of you here tonight are starting to get angry or agitated and upset about this, and that's good. You got to graduate out of there too. After anger, you get to acceptance. After acceptance, then you can begin to become functional again and literally productive, optimally productive, and begin to make a difference politically. We'll talk about that in a couple minutes. So these are the mental stages that you will have to go through. Now, mental, emotional are intimately related. What can benefit you mentally, emotionally is improved relationships. That's accomplished through communication skills, developing loving rapport, building rapport, loving relationships in your family, extended families, and communities. So after that, that builds social support, love. What happens then, according to Maslow's model, is a wonderful, incredible, miraculous thing called self-esteem. You and I, as human beings, immediately develop a knowledge, a greater knowledge of how magnificent and loving and capable and worthy we are as human beings, spiritually endowed to express and receive love and caring. Wow! That's precisely what the Rockefeller military medical industrial complex don't want you to know. That's why there's the dumbing down of the public. That's why you're told you've got to pop an aspirin to cure every headache. You don't have the power within yourself to do these things. You have to rely on the medical gods. And then you see, after you develop this thing called self-esteem, a major portion of this is the knowledge that you are spiritually endowed and you have a unique life purpose to fulfill. Part of self-esteem, knowing who we are as human beings, the magnificent gift. And the story of my grandfather comes to mind. It's a great example of how powerful we are as human beings, capable of fighting off virtually every cancer, fighting off viruses. Major, that's why I say spiritual evolution, spiritual development. is the most powerful of all, self-care regimen. My grandfather's story goes like this. My grandfather died at age 93 because he wanted to die. First of all, I'll tell you a little bit about my grandfather. He cared and loved. His purpose of his life was to love and nurture his wife for over 60 years. My grandmother. He was a chain smoker, my grandfather was. He would smoke in the most bizarre way, though. Absolutely incredible. A way you could never imagine. He would, first of all, smoke unfiltered Camel cigarettes. And he would cut them into thirds and only smoke the most tar and nicotine-ridden, hottest portion of the cigarette virtually in every puff. And he did that for about 60, 70 years. And so my grandfather also was a devout Jew. Now, I'm Jewish. I'm very, very proud of my Jewish traditions, but I'm also somebody, I'm a little strange in this way, and I'm very proud of this fact, too. I'm a Jew that accepted Jesus Christ into my heart years ago. So I'm what they call a Messianic Jew. Thank you. Thank you. You know, I appreciate that many of you are clapping. You know, many of my Jewish relatives and colleagues are saying, strange. Horowitz is strange, you know, because they just haven't gotten it yet. You know, the magnificent message of Jesus Christ was love. It was straight love. Here's how to do it. He laid it out. You just got to read it. It's amazing to me that, you know, Jewish people have an aversion to even reading the New Testament. Well, at any rate, you know, it's again because of brainwashing technology, separating Christian from Jews. It's been a long history of this. So, at any rate, my grandfather was a devout Jew, an Orthodox Jew. Three times a day, he would, what's called, lake tefillin. He would go on his knees, and he would have his prayer shawl, his tallis, and his yarmulke on, and he would bind his wrist with the scriptures in a leather box, and he would put it over his forehead, and he would meditate, and what called daven, and he would be into God, and he would be praying and meditating for 3 hours a day, three times a day, for virtually, I think, every year of his adult life. And his magnificent love for his wife was what he was living for during his last 30, 40, 50 years. So one Christmas, it was around Christmas time, my grandmother went out. They lived in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and they went out for a walk, and unfortunately my grandmother slipped on some ice, and she fell and broke her hip. They rushed her to the hospital, they patched her together, and at which point the physicians that worked on her told my father and my uncle, his brother, that you got to take your mom and put her in a nursing home, because your dad, they live on the second floor apartment, he can't care for her anymore. So they considered it, and they thought that was the best thing for them, so they told my grandfather, we're going to be putting you guys in a nursing home, and you'll like it. And he says, if you do this, I will die. And they said, but Dad, you don't understand. He says, if you do this, I will die. But Dad, you know, we already checked the place out. It's a beautiful place. It's right on the boardwalk. You can walk back and forth. You know, you can get exercise. There's people there your age. Mom will be cared for. They have a synagogue right there on the premises. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. If you do this, I will die. They did it. 3 weeks later, he was dead. And he died so fast that my father asked to have an autopsy be done because they couldn't figure out. Doctors wanted to find out, too. Why? What did this man die of? And I was standing right by my father when the physician came out of the morgue and reported to my father. He said, Mr. Horowitz, for the life of me, I cannot understand how this man could have lived for the last 20 years. Every bone, muscle, and organ and his entire body was riddled with cancer. You see, what kept this man alive was his devotion and deep love to his magnificent wife and God's presence in his life. We're all endowed with that same presence. So that's what we should be doing for ourselves. Let's look about hepatitis. Hepatitis B, which we're now, according to the Clinton administration, required to give our 12-hour-old infants in the hospital. Infants whose immune systems have not nearly matured yet, we're going to dose them with hepatitis B. And when I talked to a couple weeks ago, Canada's leading AIDS epidemiologist, he couldn't believe it. Because in Canada, it's still age 6 that they're required to give hepatitis B. Well, does it make sense? The question, does it make sense to give our children these things? Well, first of all, I was in France a couple months ago now. And there, France's leading researchers. His name is Mirko Belgensky. He used to work with Montaigne, Gallo, these types of people. Until he became politically incorrect, they pushed him out, and he started to study plant extracts and its effects, anti-cancer effects. He had such a large anti-cancer following, cures, that French President Mitterrand when the authorities told him he's only got 2 weeks to live, he went to Merkel-Belgensky, and he lived for another 18 months just on the plant extracts. So this fellow handed me a document saying, since you're going to be speaking with the CDC, ask him this question. Why haven't Merck Sharp and Dohme and Smith Kline Beecham, the makers of the hepatitis B vaccines, removed the highly carcinogenic enzyme in their vaccines? I reported it in the medical science literature. Here's the report. I contacted them personally. They still haven't removed it. Ask them why. Now let's think about it. Hepatitis B is a blood-borne pathogen. It's primarily far and away a sexually transmitted disease, and IV drug users are the only other major risk group. That means handles well over 90% of all cases of hepatitis B, which 98% of the people, 99% of the people who get this develop natural immunity and they're not infectious. Now, let's think about the risk-benefit of taking hepatitis B vaccine. If you press the pharmaceutical companies, Merck and Smith Kline, on information about this, they will tell you, if you press them, that 30%, first of all, how effective are these? 30% of these people who get vaccinated don't develop any immunity. No antibody response. Non-responders. Then they press them a little more. They tell you, well, yeah, you have to get rechecked every 7 years. Get your blood, $175 blood test to get rechecked to see if you're maintaining the antibodies. Every 7 years, if you're below age 55. Every 5 years, if your immune systems are less strong, like children. So does that mean now that every 7 years, you got to take your infant back at age 7? And they're still not nearly in sexually active years. They're still not using IV drugs. $175 blood test plus more expense. Boosters, more injections. And then age 14. Now the kids, unfortunately, are thinking about sexually active years. Does that mean you got to now bring your teenager in and you try to get a teenager to do anything, let alone go to a physician's office and get stuck? That's a good one. So, but that's not the most important. When you read the insert, it becomes more urgent. You see the side effects. List the side effects. From 15% of those who get injected, every time they get injected, sustain a little inflammation, a little swelling. And I suppose parents who are concerned about saving their children's lives, hey, we can live with that. No problem. 14% develop a little cold-like, flu-like symptoms. Hey, no big deal. A couple days, it's gone. Okay. 12, 13% more severe, higher fevers. Lasts a little longer, maybe a week or two. 11, 12% even longer. Now, as a parent, we get worried. Parents, we get worried now. It says about 8, 9% more severe long-term problems. 6, 7%. Potentially long-term chronic illnesses. 3, 4. Even more. 2, 3 more. And then it finally gets down to where it says, quote, less than 1% have serious injuries, end quote. They don't tell you what the serious injuries are. I'll tell you right now. They're death, they're brain damage, or they're chronic crippling rheumatoid arthritis. Now, let's be extra kind to these people, but let's do the analysis. These people want to inoculate approximately 90% of 50 million children in the United States. Let's cut it in half. Let's say only 20 to 25 million children. But however, when these people tell me less than 1%, I'm sorry. I've just spent 3 years, 4 years investigating who they are. I wrote a book about it. That's why I urge you to read the book. So you see whose hands you're giving your children's health and safety over to. It's a wake-up call. And you know I can't trust these people, and you can't either as far as you can throw them. So when they tell me less than 1%, I'm sorry, as a public health professional, I now, given this information, have to assume 1%. But as I said, I'll be extra nice. I'll cut in half the potential population at risk. So let's say, what's 100 times 20 to 25 million? That's 250,000. 200 to 250,000 children. That's 200 to 250,000 children who over the next 7 years will become dead, brain damaged, or chronically crippled. And those numbers on an annual basis rival those who have died from AIDS every year. Now, if that's not enough, let me use a little bit more of the Centers for Disease Control's own statistics to deliver my point to you. The ongoing Holocaust. According to the CDC, its own statistics published between 1990 and 1995, given all the vaccines, 17, 18 vaccines that they want to give, there were over 45,000 vaccine-induced injuries between 1990 and 1995. And that, they said, represented, quote, less than 1% of the actual injuries because of the gross underreporting, end quote. Do you know what they're talking about when they say gross underreporting? They're telling you that physicians do not want to tell people, report to the government or anyone, that the child sustained a vaccine injury. They will tell you, sorry, we don't know what caused this. Or maybe the child had something bad to eat. Or this is just God's work. So that when they say this, less than 1%, we have to multiply. Let's again be kind to them. Let's only take 100 times those numbers over 5 years. 100 times 45,000 in the analysis comes out to 4.5 million people injured every 5 years today. 4.5 million, mostly children. That's just right. And that, what is that on an annual basis? That's over 800,000 vaccine-induced injuries ongoing this year, today, now, in the United States, just from vaccines and vaccine contaminations. Now, have you heard anything about that? Literally, we have an ongoing holocaust of vaccine-induced injuries, and the public is completely unaware. I'm telling you that the ongoing holocaust is real. That 800,000 over 5 years, you're looking at numbers that far dwarf people who die of breast cancer, prostate cancer, or any other illness. It actually rivals heart disease and lung disease, lung cancer. It was Hilary Kaprowski who said, this is the grandfather of this molecular genetics and bioengineering of viruses. He said that almost an infinite number of monkey viruses can contaminate polio vaccines, and he said that before Congress. Yesterday I told you that today's oral polio vaccine that we're by law required to give our children are littered with monkey virus genes that we now know cause cancer. John Martin says also they're associated with attention deficit disorders, hyperactivity disorders, adult onset diabetes, and others that he suspects. It was Adolf Hitler that said if you tell a lie long enough, eventually people will believe it as truth. And the greater the lie, the more people will believe it. You know the phrase, vaccines are safe and effective, comes to mind. Vaccines are safe and effective. Vaccines are safe and effective. Never a greater lie in history has ever been told. Here's how effective these things really are. Take a look at this. This is starting in the 1920s. This is reduced death rates from Salk and Sabin vaccines. Here is when the Salk vaccine was initiated. This is when the Sabin vaccine is initiated. You see that these vaccines had virtually little, if any, effect on the general trend. When I was at Harvard finishing my master's in public health, what was I told? Like everybody else in the 70s and early 80s, we were told that the major reduction in the world's infectious diseases was associated with improvements of hygiene and nutrition. And we are now being told it has nothing to do with anything but good vaccines and modern medicine. You bet, baloney. This is the reduction in measles. You see the same trend for measles in the United States and England. And how effective are these things? And how safe are these? When over the past 17 years, all of the cases of polio in the United States have been vaccine-induced. And allegedly, they argue why we don't keep vaccinating these kids with these oral polio vaccines that deliver monkey virus genes and cancer genes to the body. When said, why don't we stop? They say, because of the immigrants maybe bringing this in. So why don't they do something about the illegal immigration? So here you go. Now look at this. Again, 87%. This is vaccine-induced. This is in my state alone, Massachusetts. They had a 642% increase in polio cases the year that they started to vaccinate. This is what they do. They play games. This was meningitis cases before polio vaccines. This was levels of meningitis. This was polio cases. Here's after the vaccines. You see a disappearance of polio. Oh, what's this? Meningitis. Many of you in this audience know people, children, who have had meningitis. It is now believed by lots of scientists that these are associated with vaccine contaminants and vaccine issues. Jonas Salk himself said when you inoculate children with a polio vaccine, you don't sleep well for 2 or 3 weeks. You know, they change, they play games, they change standards, they do all sorts of things. This is how effective are these things when you see that when they give them DPT, the most horrific of all of the vaccines, most deadly and costly. 46% of the children who got whooping cough had been vaccinated. 1984 statistic. This is 58% of those who got measles vaccines, developed measles. How effective are these things? Here you see whooping cough, pertussis, drop off, significant drop off, nothing really associated with the vaccine. It was on its way out. And then the horrifying reality of a child having been given a DPT vaccine and sustaining those injuries is beyond your nightmares as a parent. You never want to live through the horrifying reality that the child can't breathe, has difficulty breathing, high fever, pain, swelling, projectile vomiting, sleeplessness, inconsolable crying like they're possessed. Just can't stop crying. Seizures, collapse, breathing problems, brain damage, sudden infant death, by the way, indeed. Recent research shows that this is most plausibly vaccine-induced. You know, when they say the children die, the infants die, we don't know what causes this. Most of them, vast majority of them, are now known to be caused by the vaccine injuries, and they're covering it all up. Anyway, I just want to and by telling you that there are numerous contaminants in vaccines, that besides the viral particles that may cause immune suppression, there are things like formaldehyde, aluminum, mercury, mycoplasma, Epstein-Barr viruses, like we talked about yesterday, simian foamy retroviruses, cyanomegaloviruses, with clear links to cancer, in my opinion, to this day. When we look at what those cancers are that have increased, besides lung cancer, we see four soft tissue cancers primarily. We'll eliminate one of them. We'll eliminate melanoma because of its alleged link to radiation, or believed link to radiation. But that leaves us with four: lymphoma, prostate, breast. And when you see that these people were manipulating, as I've written and show you the facts in the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, you see that they were manipulating viruses for breast cancer, viruses for prostate cancer. They were looking specifically at lymphoma during the late 60s and early 70s. This is the research they were doing. In my opinion, and I'm very clear about this, we have not just had the AIDS epidemic outbreak, or Ebola. We've had virtually everything break out of these people's labs.